Live from New York City, it's The Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us today. We're going to talk about how yoga can boost your aging brain. This is from the Hospital Albert Einstein in Brazil. We're also going to look at how supplementing with one nutrient can lower the bad homocysteine, especially if you're diabetic, from Ueya University in Southern Korea. And eating chocolate once again, we've had many studies, provides relief from bowel disease, Washington School of Medicine. If you're preparing for a longer life, there's no reason to assume that you must become frail and weak in the process. Opal University Hospital in Poland. Plus, treating arthritis with algae, the Swiss Federation Laboratories, and treating post-traumatic stress disorder in adults and children with natural remedies. I'll give you some of those homeopathic and herbs, so get ready to write them down. And also from the University of New South Wales, exercising immediately after you study can help you remember better. And then I'll give you a way that I try to keep my memory sharper by combining the two, and I'll explain that a little depth. Then today, our talk back, we're going to have several issues. I'm not going to take any calls for about a half hour. But then one of the issues is, how do you relate to a friend or family member who suddenly takes great umbrage at how you voted? Either you voted for Clinton, or you voted for Jill Stein, or you voted for Trump, and now they make it very personal. In fact, they're willing to sacrifice their entire relationship based upon what they feel was your betrayal of them for supporting the other candidate. This is not uncommon. In fact, a friend of mine told me that her sister, who happens to be a very prominent and very successful corporate Democrat, she considers herself a good liberal, and indeed she may be. But I'm not going to judge her actions and what she believes in, but rather, do you really feel it's constructive to challenge the entire relationship you have with your own bloodline because of how someone voted? So what I'm going to do is I'm going to give you one example. Now, I could give you an example from each one, but I'm only going to give you one example. So today, for those of you who feel that anyone who voted for Trump was stupid, uninformed, misinformed, biased, racist, the undesirable, the redneck, the illiterate, the uncultured, the unrefined, the coarseness of your character showed that you were incapable of understanding the virtues of voting for someone who would be so important, not just the fact that it would be a woman, but a woman with deep social, racial, and cultural values in Hillary Clinton. So I'm just going to take a few issues, just a handful, and ask yourself, once you know how Clinton has voted, what she actually supports, it's not theoretical, it's on the record, would you then still say that she was the best choice for America and the world? And therefore, if you're wrong on that, then should you not then refrain from making such egregious and over-the-top declarations that, you know, you're not my brother, you're not my sister, you know, you're an embarrassment to the family because of how you voted? So I believe this will touch a lot of nerves in a lot of people, but I have a different answer. That's one thing we're going to have open calls on. Second is we're going to have open calls on what happens when a person falls on hard times and you have kids. And now your kids and you are being treated as if you are a criminal parent because you couldn't support your children. It's not theoretical. It's not abstract. It's not existential. It's pragmatism at its worst. It's happening every day through child and family service agencies. And we think it's a good thing when they intervene. Well, I'm sure there are cases when it helps the children. But why don't we ever open the door to see where those children go and the amount of sexual abuse, the amount of neglect that occurs in foster care or child services? It's a rancid, rotten, and corrupt system from top to bottom. But they act like modern-day Nazis. They're an embarrassment. And they're also taking away children who should not be taken away. And they're treating the parent as if now the parent is an abusive parent. So think of this. You cannot afford, through no circumstance of your own, to take care of your child, and then you're now double victimized. You're now made a person who is considered abusive. So being poor makes you abusive? So we'll have a discussion on that. And then also, there's an article from USA Today talking about everybody's going to get chipped. It's not are you, it's just when, and that the vast majority of people will accept it. Yes or no? Now, we already know countries that are now engaged in chipping, Australia, that should surprise no one. And there's a company in Wisconsin that had so many volunteers of employees to get chipped, get this implant in their hand, and yet no one explained the actual and complete technology. In other words, no one went under oath and said, I declare that the only use this will have is in opening your computer or opening the door to give you access to the building instead of swiping the card there. What if there was other information embedded in that chip that you had no knowledge of? Nanotechnology, which we know exists. So where is this going? So we're going to have a little discussion on what happens when the day comes when it's considered hip. Just like everyone's running out to buy the new phone at over $1,000, that you'll now have complete facial recognition and iris recognition and fingerprint recognition. So you're giving them all your metrics when you have a cell phone today. Why do they need that? Why would you allow that? And they're not even playing hard to get on this one. We're volunteering. What would you do? Do you believe society will be that complacent, that mindless, that kind of, well, yeah, if they say to get chipped, it can't be that bad, I haven't done anything wrong. Why not get chipped? We're almost there. It's already happening in companies in the United States and countries. So what, it'll be a year, 2 years, 3 years? I say it'll be within 3 years that there'll be this whole idea. Plus, there'll also be mandatory vaccination for adults. That's already being sponsored. And also mandatory mental health screening for children. Of course, as Hillary Clinton put it, and as George Bush before her with their child teen screen, it's always good when the best and brightest psychiatrist and psychologist can determine in the personality of your infant, your toddler, even as young as 6 months of age, that that kid has got a mental condition and best to start them now treating them. Because if we treat your baby now, your adolescent, you know, that toddler, that little kid, little girl, teenager, then they can be more productive in society and will be less likely. And of course, the whole theme will be showing all these kids getting killed or bullied in school, and that's what we can help prevent. So in order to prevent some bullying or prevent someone from shooting, every kid should get teen screened. Every kid should get mentally health screened. And then from there, it should be the same for all adults. After all, if you have something in your personality that could mean that you're capable of original thought, that's a danger to society, especially if that original thought in any way challenges the existing status quo. So today I'm going to give you a specific example. This is not hypothetical. I want to thank Dr. Gary G. Kohls, K-O-H-L-S, for a brilliant historical analysis of what is known as the Semmelweis reflex. It's a real person who saw what was wrong with medicine, repeatedly pointed it out, and they were so threatened, they threw him out of medicine. He ended up in a mental institution. So I'm going to show you what happens when you're right, society and its experts are wrong, and how little tolerance, patience we have for insights we consider divisive. So those are some of the things we're going to talk about today. We take on all the areas, but we always start with the latest on health and healing. And one thing that's new and important is that this is the University of New South Wales, is that when you exercise, the secret to retaining information, according to new research, that may encourage more physical activity in classrooms and nursing homes. In four separate experiments, the participants performed either 5 minutes of low-impact step aerobics after learning or no exercise after learning, meaning they were learning something but they didn't do anything afterwards, or they learned and then they went for an exercise. Now, although the strength of the effect varied between experimenters, researchers found that women who did step exercise after learning remembered the material better than those who did not do the exercise. And the findings were published in the Journal of Cognitive Research, Principles and Implications. Quote, the effect came into play only after participants had studied the material, meaning that it retroactively boosted learning of the material. Okay. Most of the time after someone studies, they get tired or they get distracted or they want to take a break. So what they're saying is, once you study anything, think of all the musicians, that wonderful cultural center of Lincoln Center, and all the opera, the ballet, the symphony. Well, it would mean that after you've been working, go out and take a 10-minute fast walk, as fast as you can walk. And what's happening is it is intensifying microcirculation to the brain. If at the same time you took something that they didn't know about, a neuromagnesium, it is a specific type of magnesium, it's called neuromagnesium, that goes into the brain. It helps prevent stroke, helps prevent seizures, it's great for the brain, but also it's part of how the brain is able to retain information. So what I do, and again, it helps me, I don't know if it'll help you, but it's worth trying, is you start off with the problem at the beginning of a workout. Lay it out in your mind. Get loosened up thinking about the problem. How does it manifest? How does it impact you? How do you feel? Are you able to deal with it rationally, or are you just emotionalizing all your problems? Then start looking at ways that you can resolve the issue. And I find that based upon thinking of solutions to problems while I'm exercising, you not only enhance the amount of energy that goes into the solution, you retain it. And therefore, you're able to work through it, share it with other people. But it's better than sitting down, reading something out of a book, closing the book, and then going back into whatever else you were doing. So, just something to think about. Also, a good study that was done at the Swiss Federal Laboratories for Material Science and Technology found that treating arthritis was enhanced with algae. That's correct. They used a polysaccharide, which is a long-chain sugar molecule, originating from brown algae. And when they used this, chemically modified, this alginate reduces oxidative stress. Now, you heard me mention last week that oxidative stress is one of our biggest problems. But brown algae has this anti-inflammatory effect in cell culture tests and suppresses the immune reaction against cartilage cells, thereby combating the cause of arthritis. So, why not have yourself some brown algae? It's easy and inexpensive to get. And have it in a miso soup, have it in a smoothie, have it in a capsule, whatever way you want to take it. And it should help you with arthritis, but also it'll help you with all other inflammatory processes in the body. And even though this is something new, it's been around for a long time in folk medicine. And from the University of Mississippi, a good study that says that there is, quote, undeniable evidence that cannabis can cure opiate addiction. Now, why is that important? Well, it's simple. As the opiate epidemic rages on, those professing to seek solutions are willfully ignoring one of the most promising treatments, medical cannabis. And when the Comprehensive Addiction and Recovery Act, CARA, was being debated back in 2016, amendments to study medical cannabis were stripped out. That's purely political and economic. After all, if the medical community embraced the scientific, peer-reviewed, proven benefits of the cannabinoids, then half of your pain medication would go away overnight, which is terribly destructive to the body and is addictive and doesn't work after a period of time. And this happens despite studies showing that medical cannabis eases neuropathic pain. And the government's own National Institutes of Health states, quote, medical marijuana products may have the role in reducing the use of opiates needed to control pain. And by the way, there are also studies showing that deaths from opiate plummet in states with legal cannabis, and that 80% of cannabis users give up prescription pills. 80%. In fact, a February 2017 study confirmed that opiate dependence and overdoses dropped significantly in medical cannabis states. In fact, in January 2017, the National Academy of Sciences published an exhaustive review of the scientific literature and found that one of the most promising areas in medical research is medical cannabis for treatment of chronic pain. But all this falls on deaf ears to those in the pockets of Big Pharma, which is largely to blame for getting America hooked on opiates. And this is from Harvard analysis, that now a new experimental study has shown exactly how cannabis works to treat opiate addiction by actually blocking the opiate reward in the brain. This study sought to determine whether the cannabis constituent cannabinoids attenuates the development of morphine reward in the condition place preference paradigm. Separate groups, and it goes on to talk about how it worked tremendously well. And this is a Harvard study. So the takeaway message is this. We have enormous proof, tens of thousands of studies in the peer-reviewed literature, the U.S. government's own database, that medical cannabis could help with brain tumors, including glioblastomas, astrocytomas, with congestive heart failure, with pain, with seizures, with autism spectrum disorder, and it is not being used. And separately from Natural Society, from Julie Kidler, opiate use now tops tobacco use in the United States. And this is important. Quote, a survey released by the Federal Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration shows that more people in the United States use opiate painkillers than tobacco, highlighting the tragedy of the opiate crisis gripping the country. A federal review published showed that opiate prescriptions in the United States are on the rise. Okay. And by the way, quote, the problem is especially severe in Tennessee, where there are more opiate prescriptions written than people actually living in the state. Wow. Now, what you find is a lot of people, especially poor people, and this is true in my travels throughout the country, I'm finding a lot of those people who are not able to survive economically, whose industries have been devastated, who are not trained in other fields, tend to go into this downward spiral of apathy. They get depressed, they give up, and if they're older, they drink, and if they're younger, they take the opiates. And either way, you're locked into a death cycle. And as a result, this year, more Americans have died from these opiates, these painkillers, than died in traffic accidents or other types of accidental death. So it's something for us to consider, because it's serious, and we're not doing it, all because of politics and how easy it is to buy off a politician to get them to do the bidding. Also, yoga can boost your aging brains. Older women who practice over the age of 50, who practice yoga, may have greater, quote, thickness in areas of the brain involved in memory and attention. And researchers found that even compared with other healthy, active women their age, yoga practitioners typically had greater cortical thickness in the brain's left prefrontal cortex. Now, that could be good news because, as the researchers pointed out, cognitive impairment from an aging process is usually associated with less volume, thinning volume in the cortical areas of the brain associated with attention tasks and also decreases in memory. So this is important, but yoga actually helped the women, and that's very important. And if you have elevated homocysteine, and you wouldn't know unless you had a blood check, because it's a silent killer. When your homocysteine gets up, 12, 13, 14, 15, and then really bad, 16, 17, you're just one breath away from a heart attack or stroke, and you wouldn't know it. But if you took folic acid, I would say 700 micrograms to 1 milligram a day of methylated, you could substantially reduce your homocysteine. Now, if you really wanted to lower your homocysteine, then take 15 milligrams of B6, and also 1 milligram of B12 and 2,000 milligrams of vitamin C, and that will substantially reduce your risk. Also, eating chocolate can provide relief from bowel disease. This is from Washington School of Medicine. So consuming the chocolate, they believe, because it has appreciable amounts of tryptophan, which is an amino acid used in the buildup of proteins, which when fed in laboratory experiments, help the immune system. It increases immune cells that foster a tolerant gut. And so that means that you can help bowel disease by eating chocolate, healthy chocolate. Quote, we established a link between one bacterial species, Lactobacillus, that is a normal part of the gut microbiome, and the development of a population of cells that promote tolerance. So that's good. And finally, preparing to live a longer life. Simply do your exercise every day. By exercising every day, both aerobically and resistance, including interval training and resistance, like you'll walk at maybe a 15-minute per mile pace and then bring it down to 12 minutes for a quarter mile. Then slow it down, then bring it down faster. Speeding up, slowing down. Same thing, you're doing bench presses. Now do fast at least for 10 or 15 reps. So it helps you. And that can prepare you so that you don't get frail. Oh, and by the way, from Poznan University in Poland, they did a study on ginkgo biloba, the leaves, and it found it offers the body and mind benefits for young active men. 160 milligram dose a day of the standardized extract of ginkgo biloba for 6 weeks was associated with improvements in maximal oxygen uptake and blood antioxidant capacity. So that's good, and this was reported to the Academy of Physical Education at the university. So get your ginkgo, and it helps your oxidative stress reduce itself, which is important. That's the latest on health and healing. I'm Gary Noll. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. My head is in a spin. My feet don't touch the ground. Because you're near to me, my head goes round and round. My knees are shaking, baby. My heart, it beats like a drum. It feels like I'm in love. I'd like to welcome all of you. I'm Gary Knoll. On the road now, just finishing cleaning up, or not finishing. Whole lot more to do, but made a lot of difference and all, and also saving trees. So I'm going to photograph all of this, including how to save a tree, even when it's out of the ground, and how to keep it alive until you can get equipment and wet equipment you can rent. It's not that expensive. And how you put a fallen tree back into the hole, how you fertilize it, how you strap it and brace it. And there's no reason that most of those trees will continue to thrive. In about 3 to 6 months, they'll have a new root system re-anchored, and you'll have kept the tree alive. Most people, the vast, vast, vast majority that I see, just they bring in a service, they cut all that tree up. There's no need for that. Anyhow, I'm going to photograph all this before and after and make descriptions of it, and I'll put it up on my website. And I'm going to start reposting through another outsource on my website later today to get all those articles that I've not been able to post for the last 14 days back on. This is a piece that I found important because it's one of those places in society that we overlook. This is from Alex Kane from Alternet, and I'll quote it. Shaquita Smith needed a place to go. The homeless mother of two called a Washington, D.C. shelter hotline, but was told there was no available spaces. Then the intake worker told her that, quote, if she and her kids had no place to sleep that was safe, she'd be reported to the city's Child and Family Service Agency for a possible investigation into abuse and neglect, end quote. Now, that's according to the Washington Post. Smith is not the only mother to fear having her children taken away and put into foster care due to homelessness. According to the article, 32 other families at just that one center were threatened in a similar way. In 25 states in the country, quote, list a caregiver's inability to provide shelter as part of their definition of abuse and neglect. Though some of those laws have been challenged in court, yet it's just another heart-wrenching reminder of the myriad legal troubles that accompany being poor and homeless. Quote, these people are simply walking in the door for assistance, and people don't have shelter, and they're saying, we're calling Child Protective Services on you. And according to the National Center for Family Homelessness, quote, homeless children are at a particularly high risk of being placed in foster care. In fact, 12%, that's huge, of homeless children are placed in foster care. And the center also knows, quote, the placement in foster care is a risk factor that predicts family homelessness during adulthood. And then, of course, you have the nightmare of what actually goes on in these centers, never exposed, and it should be. And what this tells me is that there's a core problem driving this process, and that there's simply not enough shelters for all the homeless families. And cities should spend more money on building more shelters and expanding already existing shelters. And federal housing vouchers for homeless families could be expanded to get families into real permanent housing. Now, let me give you an example of this. I did some research and found out that the state, federal, and local governments have, just in New York City, I believe at the time, I don't know what it is now, 10 million square feet of empty space. Now, that's space that's already controlled, therefore there's no landlord profiteering. So you could make those, adapt them for family use, for single use, and even for assisted living use. For example, in every one of those buildings, you could have nurses, you could have a health care, a humanistic psychological care. Because when people are homeless, imagine what they go through. I mean, I saw how people are trying to cope with no water, no electricity, no telephone, no television, nothing. I mean, they were off the grid, and they weren't prepared for it. In fact, I was just thinking, I've been to Puerto Rico many times, and there's a remarkable culture in Puerto Rico, the warmth, the sense of family and history. And I remember the last time I was down there was at the World Games, and I competed at the beginning of the week in a 5K, and then I had to go back to New York, and I came back down on the weekend to do the 20K. And all the athletes stayed at one of the hotels, and I chose a place I'd stayed at before. You have this long beach, and you have all your casino hotels where there's gambling. And then at the end, there's no more room, but there is, looks almost like Havana, if you've ever been to Havana. Right up on the water, they have these little homes, little 2-3-story buildings, and that's where you can get an inexpensive room that overlooks the water. And it's not expensive, $150 a night compared to the hotels. It's cheap, and yet it's the same beach you can go out and be on the daytime. And I remember there were some friends I know who are Puerto Rican. They live in Puerto Rico. And I asked them, I said, I'd like to treat you tonight. Let's go to a vegetarian restaurant. They just laughed at me. No, you're not going to find that. And they were right. Virtually all the food at any of the restaurants, at least the ones that they were taking me to, was all imported. And then they took me to a mall. And the mall was a nice mall. And the surrounding property was what you would expect in a fairly nice, but not terribly affluent, American community, upper middle class. And yet right beside it and surrounding it on all sides was gross poverty. And I remember at the time saying, you realize this is just another form of gentrification, and sooner or later you're going to have such a disparity between those inside that mall compound and those on the outside. And I said, also, where is your infrastructure? Puerto Rico is not a big island. I mean, it's not like Antigua or St. Croix and St. Kitts and U.S. Virgin Islands. I mean, it's much bigger than that. But it dwarfs when you put it beside the Dominican Republic, and which is about 6 times larger, or Jamaica, and Cuba, of course. You could put over the state of California, and you wouldn't see California. That's how large Cuba is. But what I saw then was a complete lack of developing sustainable agriculture, where everything was being imported. And I said, sooner or later, this is going to be the weakness. And remember, in life, we succeed or fail not by our strengths, but by our weaknesses. If you work on your weaknesses, you have a chance of succeeding. If you only work upon your strengths, and the weakness is always going to be there, and that'll be the time that you fall down. So now, here we have a hurricane. It was not a Hurricane 5 when it hit Puerto Rico. But now all lights are out, no electricity. Now this place is hot and humid under normal circumstances. No water, no food. Communities are cut off one another. We still do not know the full extent of the damage. A dam that was not on the infrastructure improvement list is now failing. And so they say it could be 3 to 4 months before power is returned, because they had an ancient grid. So what are the people eating? Well, the only food coming in is food that's coming in to their port, which has just now in the last several days been open, and that's going to be the least nutritious food. It'll be like flour and white rice and minimum of any fruits and vegetables and water. So here's an entire island of over 3.4 million people, more or less, and they are completely living off the grid. So just imagine the people in Florida or Texas or Louisiana. Now project that you have no power, no air conditioning, no fans, no refrigeration, no gasoline, no food, no water for the next 4 months. Then you start to see that that was on every single island. Every single island. You take a little island. I mean, it's a little spot in the map, Dominica. And it was completely destroyed. 90% of all the roofs were blown off because they didn't have building codes. The hotel might have, but nothing else did. So you have one anchor, a commercial dot on an island, and everything else is there to support it. But never once does anyone, not the governors, not the corporate interests, not the land developers, not the banks financing it, no one thinks, shouldn't we take some money while we're building this and build 10,000 acres of farmland so they can be self-sustaining, create their own crops. Jamaica used to be that way until Bill Clinton. By the way, it's 100% Bill Clinton's fault. And you go down there and not talk to the farmers. I was there. I've been to Jamaica 20 times. And I go back into the Central Valley. It used to be just booming with farms. Not now. Because how can you grow potatoes or broccoli when Bill Clinton, through the support of the World Trade Organization, allowed American subsidized potatoes, Idaho potatoes, be shipped down to Jamaica, as he did rice to be shipped down, Louisiana rice, to be shipped down to Haiti. And now the Haitian says, well, I can buy the local produce, but I got to pay more than if I get the American imported produce. And it's just a matter of the numbers. And as a result, all these people's farms dried up. Now you see the consequences when you can't even grow enough. So you can't show me, a single island down there that is self-sufficient, with the exception of Jamaica and, of course, Cuba. And Cuba has one of the worst infrastructures in the world. That's a topic for different discussion, a different day. But they also were impacted. And also they were not taking this hurricane seriously enough, because even on the day that the hurricane was approaching, there was still plenty of supplies in stores, which means people just didn't anticipate it. They weren't prepared. So what are we doing? We are not preparing infrastructure that is self-supporting. So if we take this to the level of a homeless person and they come into a shelter and they say, my house was washed away, I've got two kids here, can we have a place to stay? And you say, no, we're full. We got a waiting list, 10,000 people. But I'm going to have to call you and report you. What do you mean? I'm homeless for a reason. It doesn't matter the reason. You see, we're bureaucracies. Bureaucracies have all one thing in common, whether it's the Defense Department bureaucracy or the Treasury bureaucracy or the IRS bureaucracy or the FBI bureaucracy. None of us think. We're not meant to think. We don't give a damn about you as a person. We're going to be paid. We're going to be rewarded no matter what the outcome is to you. And you think, wow, how did we get here? Well, we got here because too many people were willing to think that everything was fine until it wasn't, until it became their problem. I've seen this. When I was filming my third film on veterans, and I walked down the streets they walked down, and a guy stopped and he said, see this little park? I mean, a little tiny park, like 100 feet long and 50 feet wide, and there's some benches in it and some hedges. He said, this is a veterans park. It says veterans park. I'm a veteran. I serve four tours of duty. I can't go in there. If I go in there, I could be arrested. Why? Because I'm homeless. I said, are you sure? He said, oh, yeah. Yeah. I was lucky twice I got ticket, but I'm homeless. I don't have a nickel, and I got a $300 ticket. Then when you don't pay the ticket, then they come and arrest you. Now you go to jail. Now it's going to cost you $1,500 to $3,000. So judges are actually putting, oh, yeah, yeah. We're loaded with people in prisons, where they were put in prison for no reason other than being poor and a veteran. Okay, that was a person's experience, but then we got back to this group of people living in the woods, and I asked them, they all had the same stories. So then a week later, there was a stand down where people come in and donate food and supplies once a year to these people. And all the people doing it were former veterans, going clear back to the Korean War. And there was a barber who set up a little makeshift chair, and people come in, and they couldn't afford a haircut, so he was giving them haircuts, and another dentist would look in their mouth, and he couldn't do anything. He'd just simply say, here's what you need to do, go to the VA. They said, well, good luck with that. It's two to three-year wait. But a woman was giving out bags of food, and I went over, and I was filming her, and I was talking with her. And I said, this is very noble what you're doing. He says, well, it used to be easier. I said, how do you mean? She says, well, we would, every Sunday, my church, this is, I think it was a Presbyterian church, we would go to a park in a city park that has, the barbecue and the picnic tables. And we'd set up, and the veterans would come anywhere from 50 to 75. And we would give them a plate of food, they'd eat it, and then we would bag it all up, and you'd never know we were there. And then the local community made it against the law. We were told that if we feed a homeless vet, we could go to jail. I said, I can't believe that. He said, well, over there is the mayor. Why don't you go ask him? Oh, you got to see this. So I go over and I said, Mayor, I'm being told something is hard for me to believe, that you would actually, first I heard that you took a bulldozer through a homeless veterans camp and destroyed everything in there, including people who were going out each day to look for work and had their tools, and you destroyed everything. Well, an ordinance, you know, you got to follow it. And that you also make it against the law to feed a homeless person? Well, it's not my law. Well, did you protest it? You got to watch that confrontation that I had with the mayor and American Veterans Forgotten Law, Forgotten and Betrayed. In any case, here we have a situation where we have all these vets coming back and we have no place for them. So therefore, we criminalize their lack of economic opportunity. And we don't deal with their post-traumatic stress disorder. And the only way we can is give them drugs that cause suicide. And 23 people a day who are vets are killing themselves by their own hand. More than have died in the Iraq and Afghan war combined. You can thank Dick Cheney, Hillary Clinton, a whole long list of Paul Wolfowitz. I've got 1,000 people you can thank, all nice neocons. They haven't shed a tear for any of these people, nor corrected anything. So why couldn't we make that empty public housing into something usable? Why couldn't we have a Marshall Plan for the homeless in America? We're talking about a lot of people where you go to build a homeless village and you build it with green materials and you make it sustainable. You have food that they can grow. You have health care they can get. You have psychological care they can get. And for those who just need a place for a while to get on their feet, they have it. At least you're doing something. But to take away a person's children because they're poor and they're looking for a place for them and their children, and we don't open our doors, there's something fundamentally wrong with that, in my opinion. I'd like your opinion. 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888 is our talkback number on any of those issues. Now, I have one more issue you might find of interest. And this is simply because someone brought this to my attention. Of course, members of families are always going to have something to argue about, but you still love them. They're your family. Not in this case. It became hyper-personal for this one very successful person. And I saw people like this because there was a time when one of my couple friends were the most powerful Democrat-liberal couple in New York. They're the ones who hosted the Clintons, and they're the ones who I told, I'm not going to come because I don't like the Clintons. That's when he was in Arkansas, and I already knew all about him. But all the other people came, and they were all the same mindset. They considered themselves good Democrats, and of course they were liberal. But of course they also shared some things in common I wouldn't respect. So for those of you who voted for Hillary Clinton and feel that you have the moral superiority and that you were right and you're condemning people who voted for Jill Stein, in this case, her sister voted for Jill Stein, ask yourself, did you do your homework? If you did, good. Then stay confident you made the right choice. But I'm going to show you what you may not have known about Hillary Clinton, and would you still be convinced that she would be the person to vote for today? Here's what she actually supported. None of this is theoretical. She supported the Trans-Pacific Partnership and the TTIP. She also helped with the selling of NAFTA and the World Trade Organization and of GATT. That meant that she and her husband, as co-presidents, but she was the dominant, she is the alpha in that family, they caused the loss of over 1.3 minimum million union jobs. They also caused the ghettoization of the entire Mexican workforce at the border. Massive industrial pollution, exploitation of low wages, also that a product that historically had been manufactured in the United States could now be manufactured either in Canada or Mexico, but Mexico was preferable because they could get more profit and then brought back into the United States. She supports globalizations, meaning she is the ultimate neoliberal. As long as something makes money, and as long as people contribute to the Clinton Initiative or Clinton Foundation or her campaign, they're on her good list. These are the people that she goes and gives boring little talks for 40 minutes and gets $500,000 or in that vicinity for. She does not support small business people. She does not support the homeowners. She did not support stopping the banks from massive home foreclosures, the largest in American history, even more home foreclosures than the Great Depression. Over 7.5 million homes were foreclosed on. That's nearly 30 million people were out on the street. She does not believe in repealing the Glass-Steagall Act. And the Glass-Steagall Act, which FDR put in the 1930s, was meant to separate banks. The savings and loan, where they couldn't gamble with your money. And then the others that were casino banks, they could engage in derivatives, credit default swaps, any form of very risky endeavor they could invest in. And they did. And she does not believe in repealing the Glass-Steagall that her husband, along with Graham from Texas and others, got rid of. She also does not believe that you should not support the too-big-to-fail banks. You should not break them up. You should continue to support them no matter how big their debts are. She believes in large development ideas. Well, the large development ideas are the overdevelopment of California's coastline, the overdevelopment of the East Coast, including down through Florida. And I guess we have a little lesson about, are you in the right place at the right time? You might have been, but not now. You have to learn to change when circumstances force you to change. But what if you have, well, I invested my money. I can't leave. Yeah. And you just took this big beat down, and there's going to be a whole lot more behind it. How many of these beat downs can you take before you realize the problem is not the storm, or the heat, or the rain, or the humidity, or the dryness, or the earthquake? The problem is you and your resistance to change. But the big corporations, they come in and sell you, oh, this is a minor little blip. So Mexico had a volcano in Mexico, two earthquakes of 7.1 and 7.2, then a follow-up series of quakes, including a 6.7, and they had two high-score category hurricanes, one on the East Coast, one on the West Coast, all within 10 days. Never happened before in their history. And then you're suddenly supposed to say, well, it's okay to live there? It isn't. So there's a difference. The entire Caribbean is off limits as far as living there. Visiting, that's a different story. So she's completely on the side of developers. She also does not believe that you should have your student debt forgiven. But hold on a second. Let's say you're the average student and you have a $32,000 college education, but unfortunately you did not stop before you got into college and think, will there be a profession there that will repay this debt and give me a standard of living and a quality of life, like a medical doctor? Healthcare is number one. Nutritionists, dietitians, nurses, physicians, orderlies, special labs, that's number one. Then behind that's ITs, that's number two. Engineers, number three. And then you fall off the cliff. Liberal arts degrees used to give you a sense of history and culture. They're worthless today. You can do what you could in college on your own if you're motivated, but at least 80% of people going to college today should not. Because you're going to end up with that debt. And you know what happens with debt you can't pay back or you miss payments? You start getting compounding interest. So at the end of 10 years, you now own not $32,000, you owe $76,000. And now they can have you arrested. They can actually send a SWAT team knocking on your door and have. So you should be able to forgive that. Now, I believe that if you want to go to a private institution and pay your money, you should have the right to do that. So whatever they're asking, if you're want to pay it, or you have someone else pay it for you, that's fine. That's your business. But I believe we should have free tuition for public education. So through 1 to 12th grade and then 4-year college, you can get an education, but you're not going to go broke in the process. She doesn't believe in that. She also She's against increasing the minimum wage. She supports payday loans. She is, she believes in full spectrum dominance, meaning you use hegemony, the power of the United States military and intelligence services, to undermine democratically elected regimes, like in Honduras, Paraguay, Venezuela. You undermine by planting in fascists in Ukraine and then call it a war against Russia. You increase NATO. You undermine Syria, that it invaded no one, and you go in and destroy Libya, the most prosperous, highly educated, long-lived people in Africa. If there was one country in the world that we could say, now there is a country that for its people, you can like or dislike Gaddafi, that's I don't care. But for what was going on in Libya, for its prosperity, its education, the freedom of women to do anything, to get divorced on land, and you could not even curse a woman in Libya. That was a fine and imprisonment. And if you were ever caught beating a woman, you go to jail. And there was no terrorist. There were over 600 terrorists that had been captured, like Al-Qaeda. And you could walk the streets. It was the Paris of Africa. And yet that Hillary Clinton destroyed. Have you seen Hillary Clinton or Anderson Cooper, any of the other people that fawn all over her, or the taking this whole contingent of Democrat liberals who run major media, who are big time in their field, the Harvey Weinstein and Steven Spielberg, have you seen them take a trip over and say, let us go through and see what bringing democracy and freedom to Libya did for the people of Libya? No. Because if there's one thing that the corporate liberal is good at, it's hypocrisy. They're nothing but hypocrites. And Libya and Syria, Ukraine and Venezuela, and Paraguay are just examples. She also believes in expanding the nuclear model we have by $1 trillion, but not a penny for infrastructure. But $1 trillion. To de-ghettoize America, not a penny. To help with getting rid of student debt, not a penny. To help refinance at lower interest rates, mortgages, not a penny. But $1 trillion to the military-industrial complex, that she's for. She believes increasing the defense budget, continuing the growth of the 900 military bases, further expanding NATO. She believes in expanding the AFRICOM, which is nothing more than bringing more terror to Africa, where China is getting dozens and dozens of nations on its side by its new Silk Road, by building schools and hospitals and transportation rails, high speed. We just bring bombs and death. She also believes in continuing to demonize Iran and Russia. She supports Israel's apartheid and settlements without question. She believes in drone assassinations. She believes in profiting off the loss of industries so it can be privatized. Increasing the Gulf states' arms sales, like she supports Saudi Arabia, the number one terrorist organization, creating state in the world. It's a complete terrorist state with a worse form of religion, Wahhabism. Those are the ones that throw gays off building. How do you wrap your mind around saying you're for gay rights when you were against gay rights and you were adamant about being against gay marriage and you did not support the lesbian transgender movement until you were told politically that's a group of people you want to get voting for you? But when did you stand up to the Saudi family and say, I'm not going to sell you another damn thing if you discriminate against another gay, if I hear another beheading or another crucifixion? Oh, forget. You would never hear that from her. So she supports that. You see, when you have the capacity to stop a crime against humanity and you choose to profit from that person by getting tens of millions of dollars to your foundation and making billions of dollars and sell to your friends who are the military contractors, that is not commission and it's not omission. It is, you're implicitly connected to the crime. That's also true of the United Arab Emirates, Bahrain, Qatar, they are all, and Egypt, they're all complicit. She continues to believe in the National Security Agency, the spying on all people. She supports the Patriot Act, the National Defense Authorization Act. She wants more whistleblowers to go to prison and for their only crime being that they exposed crimes against humanity the government was perpetrating. So just understand this. What liberal, who's a true liberal, would say, you, Snowden, you, Chelsea Manning, you, Drake, you, Benny, you, McGovern, you should all spend the rest of life in jail because you actually had the temerity to tell the truth about how corrupt our government is and how we're spying on people illegally. You shouldn't have the right to do that. And what about the people committing the crime? No, we don't talk about that. So if you commit the crime, you're forgiven. If you expose the crime, you're a criminal. That is driving a stake through the heart of hypocrisy. So weep me no tears, corporate liberals. You're hypocrites. And then you have to look at their, they refuse to stop Big Pharma. They refuse to stop the exploitation by Wall Street, by big oil, by nuclear. They increase the subsidies. They're increasing the military-industrial complex. They support the exploitation of women because they support countries like Bangladesh that exploits women. They support censorship of the web. There's no financial reform. They support Obamacare, and they do not support single-payer care. They believe there should be no regulation about drug pricing, so you can gouge all you want. They support pro-vaccines, mandatory vaccines. They support genetically modified food. They do not support medical marijuana. They want to keep it illegal. They do support the war on drugs. They support private prison industrial complex. They support continuing to lock up more African-Americans and gays, or African-Americans and Latinos. Now, here's the cognitive disconnect. The very people that they have put more in prison than any other presidency in human history were the Clintons. At one point, 90% of all drug offenders were African-American. And yet they'll go right into that community and say, we're for you. No. And thank goodness for those in the African-American community, including Glenn Ford and Ellie Bailey and Bruce Dixon, who've stood up and says, you are not for us. You're the enemy. And they also support mental health screening for children. There's a big buck given to the pharmaceutical industry. And they also support corporate control of the airwaves. They support hydrofracking. They support subsidizing oil and nuclear. They support Citizens United. They support offshore drilling. She does. She supports prison labor. She supports charter schools over public education. She supports standardized testing. It was under her husband and her that got kicked in. She supports the CIA and NCI, and National Security Agency. And so those are some of the things that Hillary Clinton supports. That's not theoretical. That's actual. So for your sister who chose to challenge your relationship because you supported Jill Stein. Jill Stein is against every one of those, every single one. Hillary Clinton was for every single one. So I don't care what your sister monikers herself as. She is a hypocrite. And it's unfortunate because the most self-righteous, intractable, codified minds are those who believe completely. They're a true believing cultist. And that's the corporate liberal community. The others I'll deal with on an upcoming program to show you either way you would have voted for Trump or Clinton, you'd been on the wrong side of history and issues. The right side was the one that everyone neglected, unfortunately. I'm Gary Nall. We're out of time. Thank you all for listening. Look forward to sharing more tomorrow. Have a nice day.